This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's great to be back in Washington again. I was down in Florida for a week or so at the accreditation meeting. And we had some management meetings down there. And we also started advertising our new Baltimore campus this month.
I heard that. And I've actually seen your billboards. They're fabulous. They're really nice.
That's right. We'll be teaching in Baltimore. They're in the old facility, which was formerly occupied by the Baltimore International College. We'll be teaching there at both the Inner Harbor building as well as the Little Italy building starting January 2nd. For continuing students, and then new students will be able to start February 6th. So we're very excited in being there in Baltimore. And we're going to be setting up what's called the Jamie Oliver Kitchen there in the Little Italy building, where we're going to help, we're partnering with the American Heart Association to help change the eating habits of Baltimore.
So who is the kitchen named after, the dining room?
No, we haven't really done that yet.
Oh.
But the kitchen that we're setting up is the Jamie Oliver kitchen.
Well, who is that?
Oh, Jamie Oliver is a gentleman from Britain who has been coming to the U.S. to try to change, and he's trying to globally change eating habits worldwide. He realized that that most of the disease that is inflicting us is caused by what we eat. And so he's been very successful at going into communities and changing the way people cook and the way they eat. He did this in West Virginia. You can look up Jamie. If you want to see what he does, you can look him up. He's on the TED. He did a TED lecture. So you go to the TED lectures and look up Jamie Oliver, and he explains his whole program. It's he's really quite a dynamic guy.
How did you meet him?
No, it was the American Heart Association came to us and wanted to partner with us.
Oh, I got you.
So he's working with them.
I see.
And he's setting up 5 Jamie Oliver kitchens in conjunction with the American Heart Association in the U.S. The one in Baltimore that we're partnering with will be the first one that opens up.
That's great.
So we're very excited about that. Well, this was an interesting week in technology, of course. This week, they confirmed another Earth-like planet.
Really?
They've been looking for it, and they have confirmed the first possible one, and they will give some details on that and how they're detecting these. It's the Kepler mission, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be glad to hear that this week, the XXX domains are now available. So you can buy a XXX domain.
But this doesn't mean that the other porn sites that are .coms are going to go away.
No, they'll still be there. Uh-huh. But now just the general public can go in there and get their XXX domains. They have been selling them privately for the last couple of months, and now they're open to the general to the general public. We're going to feature the website of the week, the Khan Academy. It's really a fantastic site used for online tutorials. And later in the show, we're going to feature the man who's called the father of fiber optics.
Uh-huh.
It's an interesting story.
He sure changed a lot of things, didn't he?
He did change a lot. But it was a very, very big mailbag this week.
So now it's time for
Now it is time for...
Wait a minute. What's going on here? Oh, wait a minute. I'm... Jeez, a whiz.
Here we go. Now, see, Mr. Big Voice,
get in here.
What?
They've done this. They've moved everything around in the studio. Now I can't find anything. Hang on.
Okay, Mr. Big Voice. Okay. Now it is time for...
Yeah, right. There's a letter in your mailbox.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
He gets docked this week.
He does. He's going to lose half of his money. We have an email
there in your mailbox.
Okay.
Do you see how ergonomically good this is? It's behind me now.
That's very good. But you have 3 monitors.
I have 4.
Oh, you have 4
monitors.
There's
another one you can't see because it's so far behind me.
I know. It's really, you know, very, very complicated over there.
Yeah.
We have an email from Lauren. Dear Dr. Schertz, our firm has a government contract that holds nationwide meetings with about 150 attendees a few times a month. Our firm is being asked to be the meeting owner so the government agency can delegate the hosting of meetings to us. They are currently using MS Live Meeting 2007. My boss wants to recommend that we take care of this for them with WebEx. Do you have any experience with either or any pros and cons to share? Also, I have a Craigslist account, and they're constantly asking me to re-enter my phone number for authentication. I don't know why they keep asking me. I keep redoing it monthly. I'm getting fed up with it. Is there any other site similar to Craigslist that would be as good as Craigslist for selling things? Well, I'll get into that, Lauren.
Yeah.
Well, there are basically Windows Live Meeting is one of the newest entries to the sort of the web-hosted meeting, and WebEx has been around for a while. Windows Live Meeting has a kind of a complicated pricing structure. The number, how much it costs each month depends on how many simultaneous seats you have, and it goes up. It initially could be cheaper than WebEx if you only have 15, but at 150 people in the meeting, it's probably going to be more expensive than WebEx. WebEx, you can, for only $49 a month, you can support up to 3,000 users. So WebEx is a lot simpler to use. Mm-hmm. The user interface on WebEx is much easier than Windows Live Meeting. So Windows Live Meeting, frequently you got to have some training sessions to get people to use it. It's more complicated to use. WebEx has been around for quite a while. They've got a very simple pricing structure, easier to use. I think if you're just choosing between those two, and since you've already pinned it down at 150, I think WebEx is certainly an excellent, excellent choice. Now, as far as Craigslist, I think for selling stuff, Craigslist is going to be probably the best site to sell things.
Unfortunately.
And as long as you can actually authenticate your phone number, which it sounds like you can, you're just going to have to keep doing it. I don't know any other better option for you. As you know, we've talked about this phone number authentication. So people, spammers and crooks can't set up and sell things and not be traceable to a particular location. So the phone number has to be traceable to a particular geographic point so they can track you down. And that means they will not authenticate cell phones. They will not authenticate IP phones, IP address phones. So they'll only authenticate landlines, basically. And so I'm glad that yours will authenticate. I think you'll just have to stick with it. But that was a great question on WebEx and Live Meeting. We have an email from a listener in Burke. Dear Dr. Schertz, I'm going to rent a room in my house, and I want to give the new tenant internet access through my cable modem and wireless. How can I keep the network devices completely separate and protected? Thanks, a listener in Burke. Well, this is a problem. If you have somebody coming into your network and log on to your wireless network, of course, they're behind the firewall. And so your only line of attack would be to enable the firewall in your particular PC and not do any file sharing. So they could not get into your device at all. But you still would have, if you rented your room to a hacker, he could still probably hack into your system. So if you want to be really protected, you'd like to have a firewall between you and your tenant. Now, the way you could do that, you could actually cascade two wireless firewalls together. You take one firewall and plug it in through the Ethernet connection to your cable modem. And so you basically get a separate wireless device that plugs into your cable modem. And then what you would do is you would then use the downstream wireless device to connect your computer to it. And so that the tenant would not be able to see your computer because there would be a firewall between the two of you. And then your tenant would use basically the main wireless device provided by your cable modem company. And you would be downstream from that, and you'd have a firewall between you. So, the one disadvantage, you're cascading two firewalls. There could be a slight speed issue, but probably wouldn't be too bad to deal with. Mm-hmm. And that would give you the maximum amount of protection. So you actually may have another Wi-Fi router around in the house. You could just plug it in. Now, the thing is, if you put two Wi-Fi routers together and they're both at the same frequency, they share the bandwidth. So what you want to do, you want to set the channels. So these wireless routers typically have 11 channels, and so 11 distinct channels, and so one channels 1, 6, and 11 do not overlap. So I would set one of them at channel 11 and the other one at channel 1 so they don't overlap, and then you'd be just fine. In my case, I would probably not do the cascaded router. I'd simply set up the firewall in my machine, and then I wouldn't rent to a hacker.
Well, you really don't know that until after the fact now, do you?
You really...
That they're a hacker or not.
Yeah,
until after they've done it.
You don't. But you could actually use install a program called AirSnort, and you could see what they're doing. You could look at all their packet traffic if you
AirSnort.
If you'd want to do that. Now here's the one downside about this sharing your Wi-Fi with someone. Suppose that you own that IP address at your account, and they're downloading 5,000 illegal MP3s.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one liable.
Exactly.
It's your liability because
right.
It went through your router and your IP address.
Wouldn't it be better just not to give them access to your internet?
Well, it probably is a rent issue, and
yeah,
you can probably make some money.
Yeah.
So you could so you really would want to, and if you want to try to restrict the kinds of activities they do, you're going to have to get a more expensive router that can actually do traffic profiling.
I guess the lesson we learn here, there's risk in everything.
There is risk in everything, mm-hmm. and so it's really a cost-benefit trade-off. If you
yep.
make enough money
mm-hmm.
by selling it, then give it a shot. I know I had a problem whenever my son many years ago used to be downloading all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Only, of course, legal copies. He made a point to only download legal copies.
Okay,
And what he would do, he would be downloading like 20, 30 songs all at once. And then he would just leave his machine on. And I would go and try to use the internet, and I had no bandwidth.
Right.
He sucked up all the bandwidth. I might have 20 megabits per second. It was all being used by his uploads and downloads, and he completely... So I was thinking there's something wrong with my internet service provider. So then I got AirSnort, and I looked at the traffic, and it was just massive upload and download of his system because the laptop was in his bedroom. The lights were off. I didn't know what was going on exactly. So
he
then
it set it up to download stuff, and he went away. It was downloading while it was gone, right?
That's right. It was downloading while it was, and I couldn't log out because he had a password protection on his computer. So I just unplugged it.
Yeah. That'll show him.
Yeah. And
pardon
so
me. That was another snort. Hey, is AirSnort free or is that something you got to pay
no,
for?
No, it's free.
Wow.
It's free. So I was it's what they call a packet sniffer.
Uh-huh.
And so it was
like a guard dog of the internet.
Yeah. So it was. Now he's now living in another city, so I don't have that problem anymore. but it was a problem for a while.
The holidays are coming. You'll have that problem again
soon.
Yeah,
I think that could very well be the case. Okay, we have an email from Alan. Dear Tech Talk, I recently replaced my system hard drive. And I took out the old internal hard drive and installed it in an external enclosure with the USB connection. So I just plug it in my USB port, and I'd use it as an external hard drive because I had a lot of documents on it that I wanted to keep, and I just wanted to have access to them. So when I plugged it into my computer, the disk shows up as being unformatted. So I can't even get any of the data from it. I got valuable documents there. It was formatted in NTFS format, and that's the old format that came out with Windows NT. It's called New Technology File System, NTFS, and it was an internal drive as NTFS. Now, what should I do? It shows that it's not formatted. Should I reformat it to get my data, or how should I do? What's my next step? Well, Alan, do not reformat your hard drive. It'll make your data virtually impossible to get. You'll have to use a lot of data recovery tools to get it if you reformat it.
Mm-hmm.
So don't reformat it. That's number one. So what you've got to do, you have to figure out whether it's a problem with the hardware or software or what it is. So you have to do some diagnostics here. See, what happens, your computer thinks that something is not formatted if it cannot read what's called the master boot record. That's the very first segment of storage on the hard drive is the MBR, master boot record, and that's where the computer gets the information as to how big the disk is, how much capacity is on it, and it gives some specific definitions of how many segments or how many partitions are in it and that sort of thing. And so if the master boot record is corrupted, it'll show up as being unformatted. But all of the data is still on the drive, and you can probably still reclaim it. Now, but we're not really certain whether the master boot record is corrupted. So we have to check, first of all, is it a hardware problem? And maybe the USB port in your computer isn't working right. So you take the external hard drive, plug it into another computer, see whether that works. And so if that works, you know that it's the USB port. Change the USB connection, USB cable between them. It could well be that you actually installed the hard drive improperly in this container, you know, in this external enclosure, because you got to actually hook the wires up in a particular way. If you hook the wires up the wrong way, it may not be, it may show up as not being formatted. So what I would do is I'd go back and double check all your instructions, make certain that you did it exactly right, put in all the wires at the right place when you put it together, and double check that. And then if you still can't find an error, then you might get another hard drive that you know is working and put it in that box to see whether that hard drive works. See, what we're doing, we're trying to, through matters of elimination, figure out what the problem is. And so if it works on another hard drive but not on this particular hard drive, you know it's not the box but the hard drive. So that's sort of the process you go through as you think through it, but don't reformat it. Now, if in fact it turns out that the box is good, the cable is good, there's no USB port problem, and in fact it's the hard drive that's not properly operating because it's not reading the master boot record, then you've got to use data recovery tools. So what you want to do is you want to plug your hard drive into the computer, and we've talked about these before. There's one, Recuva.
Yep, we talked about
it a few weeks ago.
Recuva,
yep. R-E-C-U-V-A by Piriform. And you can recover files that are on a drive that appear to be unformatted. It goes in, it reads the files, gathers them all up. Now, another one is Get Data Back. Okay, Recuva is free. Mm-hmm. Get Data Back costs a few bucks, maybe $29. So I'd try this Recuva by Piriform. It's a pretty good tool. And then you can get your data back. Now, there is one issue here that is sort of underlying all of this. It appears that you haven't done a backup.
There's a problem.
And that is a problem. They haven't backed up. What I've gone to is I've basically gone to using these backup services in the cloud. And so now anytime I do anything on my laptop, it's backed up on the cloud.
And
it automatically, I don't have to even think about it. I change a file, it automatically backs up. It costs you $40-$50 a year, and I'm telling you, it is worth it. This cloud backup is really the way to go. When I first set up the cloud backup, it took about 3 days to do the full backup because I had a huge hard drive. But now, once it's backed up, whenever I make small changes, it just incrementally backs it up again. So that's kind of all you needed to know about that particular situation, and start your backup. Great.
Fantastic.
Email, Alan.
All right, now we go to Adventures in Pushing Buttons.
Yes.
Oh, he's there now. Okay, let's push
he's
another.
There.
He's there. Let's try this one. It's music. That means
okay.
We're going to go to a break.
We're going to go to a break. Can you hear that music?
You can sort of hear it.
Okay.
There it
oh,
is.
Oh, there it
oh,
is.
It's,
okay.
It's kind of like something your son downloaded. How's
yeah,
that?
Could
this
be.
Is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. We will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed. Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to talk about Charles Quinn Cowell. Charles Quinn Cowell is a pioneer in the development and use of fiber optics and telecommunications. Cowell is commonly referred to as the father of fiber optics. Charles Quinn Cowell was born November 4th, 1933 in Shanghai, China. Cowell's family moved to Hong Kong in 1948, where he completed his secondary education at St. Joseph's College in 1952. He did his undergraduate studies in electrical engineering at Woolwich Polytechnic, now the University of Greenwich, and he obtained his master's degree of science. He then pursued research and received his Ph.D. in electrical engineering in 1965 from University College in London. While he was working on his Ph.D., he was doing research at STL, Standard Telecommunication Laboratories, which was at that time owned by ITT. STL was located in Harlow, England. While he was at STL, that is when he began his work on fiber optics. In 1963, Cowell was appointed to be head of the Electro-Optics Research Group, and under that group was the research on fiber optics. His research first theorized and proposed to use glass fibers to implement optical communication, and that, of course, became the basis of today's fiber optic communication. At the time, conventional wisdom was that glass had too much absorption to be useful, because a fiber, you're going through maybe 100 miles of glass when you go through fiber optic. So if you, say, take a pane of glass and look through it and on the just normally, it's going to look very clear. But if you hold it on its side and look down the edge, it kind of looks green.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Because, and so can you imagine that much absorption, which is forcing that green color, that much absorption, if you're trying to go through 100 miles, it wouldn't go anywhere. And so people thought, you know, it's just not practical to go through glass these long distances without having all of the signal absorbed very quickly. At that time, typical absorption was around 1,000 dBs per kilometer. And every 3 dBs, that's decibels, every 3 dBs you have a 50% drop.
Right.
So you have 6 dBs, it's 50% twice, and so you do 1,000 dBs, you've basically got nothing left after a kilometer, and mm-hmm. so it just really wasn't practical. But he did not give up hope. He actually did some research, and he concluded that the fundamental cause for attenuation in glass were impurities in the glass, and he predicted that if you could have glass with fewer and fewer impurities, that you could get attenuation below 20 decibels per kilometer, 20 dBs per kilometer. And that was sort of the magic cutoff to what would be a practical device. Now, Cowell proposed the use of high-purity fused silica for optical communications. I mean, that's basically sand.
Yeah, which is basically where glass comes from,
yeah,
right?
that's essentially sand, but you had to get rid of all the impurities. He presented these results to the IEEE in January 1966 in London, and he further published these with his colleague George Holcomb in July. And this was where they basically proposed the use of high-purity fused silica for fiber optic communication. he was actually also a strong proponent of the use of single-mode fibers for long-distance optical communication. He was so confident that they could go long distances because it solved the attenuation problem. He said, how can we keep the pulse from spreading as you go further and further through the fiber? You see, if you have a fiber which is single-mode, there's just one mode which has one velocity propagating down through the fiber so the pulse doesn't spread. If you've got a multimode fiber, you have some modes that bounce back and forth to the edges. And so depending on the angle of the bounce, they propagate down the fiber at different velocities. The one that doesn't bounce goes fastest. The ones that bounce at a steeper angle go slower. And so if you have all of these different multimodes, multiple modes going down the fiber, over time, the pulse spreads out because each mode has a different velocity going down the fiber. So he was proposing the use of single-mode fibers. Ultimately, all of his predictions held true.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was sort of like the voice in the wind. There were so many skeptics, but he was a big believer. So what he did, because it was really a materials problem, so he started going around the world visiting glass manufacturers, polymer factories. He was discussing techniques with them on how to make high purity glass. He went around the world because he had to get materials people focused on this problem. And he actually even went to the U.S. to try to convince Bell Laboratories to get into it at the time. This was 1966. And Bell Labs thought, you know, this fiber optic is so lossy, it's not useful.
Uh-huh.
So they had no interest in it. That was in 1966. Okay, by 1969, after he really worked the materials folks, Cao and M.W. Jones measured the intrinsic loss of bulk fused silicon at 4 dBs per kilometer, which is below the magic number of 20 dBs per kilometer. And all of a sudden, it was practical. And Bell Labs took note. They said, okay, fiber optics looks good. Of course. And now, ultimately, Bell Labs produced a lot of fiber optics devices because that became the dominant connection mechanism for telecom. Cao published more than 100 papers and was granted over 30 patents. Now, he also predicted, one of his patents, by the way, was for making a fiber optic which could operate well in a wet environment. And he then felt that and proposed that we would have undersea cables that were connecting the world. You know, we had undersea, metallic cables,
right.
And he thought there'd be undersea fiber optic cables that would connect the world. And in 1983, he predicted that we would have these completely covering all the oceans and seas, and that prediction ultimately became true. So he was called the father of fiber optics because he saw the potential of it, identified the problem, and got a team of researchers together to work on it. Now, Charles Cao always believed that true progress was through teamwork. That's why he was going out to share his results with everybody, and it was really quite a remarkable achievement. It turns out that the breakthrough in materials research was done at Corning Glass.
Interesting.
And because after he'd visited him, and Corning Glass developed the secret sauce to make ultra low attenuation fiber, and previously on a Profiles in IT, I profiled the guys at Corning who developed that glass,
mm-hmm.
because that was really used. And then once Corning had that major breakthrough, then other ones did the breakthrough. But Corning would not have worked on it had it not been for Charles Cao saying this is really the impurity issue and there's real potential there. After he finished that, he joined the Chinese University of Hong Kong in 1970. He founded the Department of Electronics. He really only stayed in academia for 4 years. And in 1974, he returned to ITT Corporation, which was the parent company of STC. And he worked in Roanoke, Virginia, where there was an ITT headquarters down there. And he became the first ITT executive scientist in 1982. And in 1986, he was appointed the ITT corporate director of research. So he was like moving up in the world. But then he decided he liked academia. So he popped back into academia, and then in 1987, he became the vice chancellor of the Chinese University of Hong Kong, and he stayed there until his retirement in 1996. Now, he ended up moving to California to be close to his kids, and in 2004, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and that's really a debilitating disease, and now he's going downhill, but he's certainly has made a huge contribution in fiber optics. One of his hobbies throughout his whole life was making pottery, which was a traditional Chinese handiwork. In October 6, 2009, Cao was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics for his contribution to the study of the transmission of light in fiber optics and for fiber optics communication. So, yet again, another physicist has succeeded.
While you were talking about him, I found his biography on the Nobel Prize website. Yes. Check out this picture. This is a picture of him in his early days and his fascination with sand. Isn't that funny?
Wow.
Even as a kid, he's playing with sand. Yeah. And this picture shows him making an arch. A freestanding arch out of sand, which is kind of amazing.
Right. So he was working with silica even back then.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, fascinating stuff. You keep finding these people. And we have all of the profiles in IT on the website. Where can people find?
You can go to techtalkonline.com. That'll take you to the website. I've got every show going back to the year 2000 on the web. You can also sign up for the podcast. And you can get, or either on the website, you can get the RSS feed, or you can go to Apple iTunes and get the podcast.
Gotcha. Now, there's one more thing you need to tell people
and
about.
I'm monitoring the Facebook page.
Yes, exactly.
You
see?
Go to facebook.com/TechTalkOnline. If you got any comments, I'm monitoring the Facebook page real time as I speak.
Good. You're listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. Stand by. Your chance to play our little quiz is coming right up.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
For Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Yeah, you thought this was a radio show.
It's a big, fat mess is what it is today.
I know. There are always glitches in the classroom because it is a classroom of the airwaves.
That is correct.
And
it's
on
not
the
a
internet.
Radio show.
Now, the thing is, if you are attending class, you are going to have to learn something, and we evaluate this through an assessment tool called a pop quiz. Now,
yes,
the nice thing about this
tool,
the nice thing about this assessment tool is that
There's a reward tool at the end.
It's that not only will you receive an A in your assessment, but you will get two tickets to fine dining at either the Escoffier dining room or the Carême dining room.
Would that be called a success enhancement, perhaps?
Yes, it could be. It could be success enhancement. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Charles Quinn Cowell. He, of course, is the father of fiber optics, and he was a proponent of making fiber optics in a particular, highly purified state of a particular material.
Boy, you better be paying
what
attention.
What material did he propose for the fiber optics?
Okie dokie.
Yeah.
If you know the answer to that, call us now. You're going to earn your food today. 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333. Okay.
Well, I moved this story right up to there because I thought you wanted to get to it early, Jim, about the triple X domains.
You know me.
The triple X domains, the XXX domains are now available. This is the Internet's new red light district, and it's open for business. Now, it's been actually for a while, it's been closed because they were trying to register preemptively certain domains. For instance, they have registered the sarahpalin.xxx so that nobody could use it, or the obama.xxx. So they went through all the celebrity names, and they tried to take them off the plate because celebrities would not want to have necessarily an XXX name. Then they allowed businesses to go in and preemptively register their domain name so that somebody wouldn't have an XXX related to that one. And they would copyright holders who would want to protect it would have to pay $200 to $300 to register the domain. So most of the money has been made from people that do not want to be part of the XXX domain. And then what is interesting is that the real porn sites really don't want XXX because they're too easily filtered.
Right.
So it's a good moneymaker, but I don't know that if it's a productive use of the Internet. So most of the registrations have been defensive in nature. So now all the defensive registration period is over. And the good news is now you can go in there and you can register your own XXX domain. It's open to the general public.
Oh, good. I'm going to rush off and do that
It costs about $100 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, say, a normal domain would be, say, maybe $29 a year to $19 a year, something like that. This is $100 a year. I think Network Solutions is making it $129 a year. I think GoDaddy was $99 a year. So there are various pricing on the thing, but they're all charging more for this because they think they can get more. Now, all the XXX registered websites will be scanned for viruses by McAfee because somehow they think that these sites are going to be infected. The domain is being sold to the adult industry as a means of reassuring consumers that their websites are legitimate and virus-free. It's a legitimate porn site.
Oh, good.
As opposed to just a porn site.
An illegitimate porn site.
More than 50,000 XXX domains were registered on Wednesday, but most of these were done by defensively, and some were speculators trying to buy them, hoping they can resell them. So that is the news of the week.
Good. Guess what?
Yes.
I think we have somebody new on the phone here, so we're going to go to line two. This is Wayne, who is calling us from Middletown, Delaware. Wayne, good morning. How are you?
Oh, this is Anthony.
Oh, Anthony. I'm sorry. Yeah. How are you doing this morning, Anthony?
Oh, pretty good.
You are a first-time caller, it looks like.
Yes.
Good. All right. How did you find out about us?
Oh, I was just listening, turning the radio station. I was driving to Hattiesburg from Middletown, and I heard you talking about some tech stuff, so I just...
Oh, cool. All right, so you're out in your car right now.
Yeah.
Very good. All right, Doc.
Okay, early in the show, I was talking about Charles Quinn Cowell. He, of course, father of fiber optics. What material did he propose for the use of these low-loss fibers?
It's sand.
Sand? Well,
I don't know. What do you think?
It's fused silica.
Sand?
Yeah, we're going to give it to him?
I'll give it to him.
Okay, all right.
Give it to him.
Wayne, because you went to such trouble to find us.
Because actually
listening.
I did say sand. It's technically it's fused silica, but sand would be the colloquial name for it.
You slipped by the East German judge, Anthony.
That's right.
Stand by on the phone.
Very good.
Andrew will take your information, and we appreciate you calling this morning. Doc, you want to cover something else here really quickly while we before we go to the break?
Yeah, let's talk about the Kepler confirms the first planet in the habitable zone.
Okay.
Okay, now NASA launched the Kepler mission to confirm planets that were could be inhabited by in the fashion that Earth is inhabited. And the newly confirmed planet, this was the first planet that's been confirmed by Kepler, was the Kepler-22b. That's what they named the planet. It's about 2.4 times the radius of the Earth. And the habitable zone of a planetary system refers to a band of orbits where liquid water could exist on the surface. This is what they define it as. So this particular planet is far enough away from its sun that you could actually have liquid water in existence. Now, Kepler has discovered all more than 1,000 new planet candidates.
Mm-hmm.
10 of these candidates are near Earth size and are orbiting in the habitable zone. But in order to basically verify that a planet is there, they go through a validation process where they basically have to detect the planet three times in order to verify it. And Kepler-22b is the first planet in the habitable zone that was actually verified three times. Kepler-22b is 600 light years away. Now, the planet's larger than Earth. It's 2.6 times its Earth, but it's the orbit around its sun is around 290 days.
Wow.
Its sun is very similar to our sun. It's called a G-type star, and it's similar to our sun. It's slightly smaller and slightly cooler. Now, Kepler discovers planets. You see, the planets actually don't light up. They're not like stars. So you can't see a planet that's 600 light years away, but you can see the star.
Right.
And so if a planet passes in front of the star, there's a slight dip in the intensity. So Kepler is looking for these dips in intensity. And so they basically monitor it. And if they can see the same planet pass in front of the sun, the distant sun, three times, then they say they validated it. So then they've they compute through the mathematics how far it is from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fairly subtle kind of measurement to come up with. Now, I don't know how we're going to get there. I mean, if it's an Earth-like planet, but it's 600 light years away.
We have plenty of people here. We could move there in order to...
I mean, the thing is, I mean that means if you can go the speed of light, it would take you 600 years to get there. So there's...
That could be a problem.
So there's really no way to get there unless we can go through a wormhole or something. It's just it's just not reachable, actually. But it's interesting to do this thing. Now,
maybe using fiber optics, we could at least establish communications.
I don't think it would do. Now, Kepler science team uses ground-based telescopes and the Spitzer Space Telescope to view observations on planet candidates that the spacecraft finds. Of the 54 habitable zone planet candidates reported as of February 2011, Kepler-22b is the first to be confirmed. This milestone will be published in the Astrophysical Journal next month.
It's such a tease, don't you think? There's this other world out there that we probably will never know that much about.
But one thing, if you identify these planets, then you can focus on this, even get any radio signals from them in case they, you know, maybe we'll pick up their version of Oprah.
Of Tech Talk.
Their version of Tech Talk.
Exactly.
Yes, of course. And in fact, we are sending in 600 years... They will receive this Tech Talk radio show there.
You will be helping them catch up with the times. Isn't that amazing? It's mind-bending when you think about it.
It certainly is.
Yep. This is a Tech Talk, and sometimes we are mind-bending here. Stand by. We have more coming up here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. There's a new trend in IT as far as this year is concerned. The big trend of 2011, BYOD.
That sounds fascinating.
BYOD. Now, you've all heard of BYOL. BYOB, bring your own bottle.
I was going to say, no, I've never heard of BYOL. Why don't you tell me?
I haven't heard. BYOB, bring your own bottle. This is BYOD, bring your own device.
Uh-huh.
See, there's been a trend in, personal technology. We had, first of all, smartphones, which are really very, like the iPhone, very powerful computers that you hold in your hand. Then people have iPad 2s. They've got storage devices. They're backing up to cloud services like iCloud. And so they basically can share documents between work and at home. And what is happening is that over time, people are beginning to bring in their own IT technology to work and use it at work and then use it at home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for years, CIOs hated homebrewed stuff.
Yeah.
They didn't like to bring in this. There's a security risk. We don't want you to bring it in. It's a big problem. And that was really BlackBerry's forte because they said, okay, we're going to work with the CIOs. We're going to have something very secure. So BlackBerry had penetrated that market. But there was a huge demand for the smartphone that was not a BlackBerry like the iPhone. And what has happened this year is finally the CIOs have accepted the inevitable and they said, okay, you're going to bring in your devices. We're going to integrate them into our network so that it can be done safely. In fact, I was working with a software company in Boston. I was talking to the CEO a couple of weeks ago, and he said they have a new policy now. They let their employees, they buy their own laptop, and they just provide all the network infrastructure. They have no help desk. They just have an FAQ. It's up to everybody to keep their device working. And they said, the amount of manpower that it requires for them to run their infrastructure has gone down dramatically. Because, in fact, people can, if it's their own device, they take care of it. If somebody has trouble with their, backing up
right
to the iCloud, getting their iPad to work, they figure it out because
right
it's theirs. So they just have posted these FAQs, and it's a sea change going on in technology. And the key advantage now is that employees are permitted to use a single device for all their work, both work as well as personal. So they can take it home, they can work on it, they can get, and so the business actually gets a more productive individual. And they get somebody who actually understands their device because it's something that they picked out and that they love.
Right.
And it's also more cost effective because employees tend to take care of the devices because they're their device. Now, the flip side of this growing bring your own device culture is that now more of the work for maintaining and troubleshooting is now shifting to the consumer away from the IT department,
right,
which is what happened up there in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And so now individuals who want to get access anywhere, anytime, at home, they want to get the cloud working, if something doesn't work, it's up to them to fix it. because they're connected to the cloud. And so there is kind of a shift to the consumer in this thing. But I think this is a good move, and it's a very logical evolution of technology becoming ubiquitous.
Like with everything else, I mean, there's an up and a downside. I mean, it's great for you to be able to use your own computer at work. However, you're probably going to use it up faster. Right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be the one paying for the – so it's going to cost you money, really, as opposed to
– Well, what they do up in the company in Boston, they just give the employees a certain dollar amount, mm-hmm. and they can use that dollar. They can either buy a computer with that much money, or they can add some of their own money and get some really fancy computer.
Gotcha.
And so – the company is investing in the technology, but the employee buys it.
Yeah. Now, here's the problem that I've got, mm-hmm. security.
Yeah.
Somebody taking secure documents out of the office. But, I mean, we've seen that before with thumb drives and disks and stuff winding up out someplace that somebody steals and has important, like, Social Security numbers or important information on it. How do you get around that with this sort of a setup?
Well, I mean, here's the thing.
I
mean, if somebody's going to steal documents, they can email the documents as attachments.
Yeah.
They can upload them over the Internet and never leave their desk.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that this is going to affect that one way or the other. But the issue becomes... if you lose it.
Right. Yeah,
okay.
Or it's stolen.
Or if it's stolen. And so, for instance, the that firm in Boston, what they did, in order to be connected to their network, they forced your device to have a 5-digit password. And if you do not follow that security rule, they don't let you connect to the network, and they erase all your emails. So they're enforcing. So at the system level, they're enforcing security.
Yeah,
you really must watch that. Now, the other thing that you want to be careful of if you've got all this stuff on your computer is get applications that log you out. You know, if you go into your cell phone and you open up an app, you're logged in all the time. You just open it up, you're logged in. It remembers the password. Well, if you lose your cell phone and it's not doesn't have a passcode on it, they can get all your passwords on your application. So you really want applications which will log out, or you need to log out,
right,
if you want to be completely safe. Like when I lost my cell phone earlier this year, I had to go in on 6 different sites and change all my passwords. And so as soon as I lost it, I can't remember. Did I lose it or was it stolen or something?
Can't remember.
I can't remember the details. It's kind of vague to me now. It was back those my BlackBerry days.
It doesn't even matter now because
So I had to go through and change all of my passwords, and I was okay. And then we had the system connected to our servers at Stratford, and we just went in and wiped all the emails out. So we could handle it. So you've got to basically be careful with that. And then, you know, you basically want to make certain that you have enterprise level cloud service, which is secure. So Apple has the iCloud. There are a lot of cloud storage services, but you want to get those. So you might want to have so the business enterprise is probably going to select the cloud service that meets all the security issues, and then you'll be quite fine. And now the nice thing is, if you do your grocery list on your iPhone and it goes to the cloud, you open up your iPad, your grocery list is going to be there.
Yeah.
So the merging of workspace and home space is like just going away.
It's making us more productive.
And being us more productive, or maybe such that we can never get away. So
that's
this mobile empowerment is actually a new reality in IT, and the IT departments are actually embracing it. And a corporate-wide mobile usage policy is a good first step. Next comes a way to enforce them through the security rules. But that is the big trend of 2011, BYOD, bring your own device.
All right. You're listening to Tech Talk, your classroom of the airwaves, heard via Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. More tech news right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different. With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. We have a comment from Kenneth Hutchison on the Facebook page.
Don't do this to me.
He said, I wonder what percentage of the show's listeners are old enough to understand your reference to the East German judge.
Thanks for making me feel even older today than I already feel.
And then I also got a message from James Messick. He said, the feed is broken. The November 19th episode shows up on the feed, but I can't download it from my client on my iPhone or from iTunes.
Huh.
It does play on the website. You know, James, I did notice that sometimes I could not play the show on my iPhone because it said it had a format that it couldn't recognize.
Do you actually do that?
Yeah, oh yeah, I can play this. I can play it right from the iPhone because it has iTunes.
My point is, you lived the show. Why would you go back and listen to it again?
Because I just like to dump. I just love to listen to it when it's over with. You know, actually, I never listen to the show, but I like to make certain the feeds are working. And this was a problem. I'm going to look into that, James, because that is a problem. You can play it from the internet. All the protocols are the same. So I'm trying to figure out whether something with the Apple iTunes. Configuration change. I'm going to have to go back and look at that to see what I've got to do, but those were great comments. Let's talk about the Khan Academy, the website of the week. This would be khanacademy.org. Now, the Khan Academy is an organization which has a mission. It's a nonprofit organization which is trying to change education for the better by providing free world-class education. It turned out the guy that started it was actually a Wall Street trader. Now, I'm going to profile him next week in more detail.
Okay.
And he was giving math lessons to his nieces. And he ended up creating these little low-quality videos that they would post to the web on YouTube. And these things became very popular. Now there are almost 2,700 videos on the web. And kids are using these a lot. They also have math exercises where it gives you a problem, and then it will randomly generate another problem for you to work on, and it shows you how to actually work on it piece by piece, and you can track your progress. So as you do more things, you can keep track of where you are, and then you get achievement badges if you achieve so much. This has been instrumental. Khan Academy has been instrumental in many of the K-12 educational programs because there's a trend now called Flip the Classroom, where the kids actually learn the material online at home, and when they come to class, they just work on the problems, and the teacher helps them do their homework in class, and then they do all the lecture stuff at home. And this Khan Academy is a real example of flipping the classroom, and this guy has really made math very easy. I went and talked to the online instructor, one of our online math instructors, and they've embedded a lot of the Khan videos in our online math instruction.
Excellent.
Because he says these things are really, really fantastic. So this is something where somebody just used some very simple tools, a blackboard and some very simple tools and a mic in order to make these videos. So that would be khanacademy.org, K-H-A-N, academy.org. That is the website of the week. Well, we're almost through with the show. Go to www.stratford.edu, check out the Stratford programs, and also go to techtalkonline.com. We love your emails at techtalk@stratford.edu.
You can hear the show again tomorrow at 6 p.m.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
Speaking of Navy athletics, it's the Army-Navy game today here on Federal News Radio. Coverage starts at 12:30, kickoff at 3:30. College basketball, George Washington faces Syracuse tonight at 7. The forecast, it is going to be mostly sunny and 45 today, right now 41 at 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal